This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. We have some news to talk about. Anthony Bennett, former number one pick, was waived by the Brooklyn Nets and has not been a good career for him. Very strong argument for him that he may be the worst bust for number one pick in NBA history.
Yeah, you said former Brooklyn Net. I think he's a former NBA player at this point, too, because it's hard to imagine now, you know, four teams in 4 years. Obviously, the Cleveland Cavaliers seemed like so long ago that he was even on that team or even drafted number one. And you're really, you know, where does he go after this? Does anybody take a flyer on him? Do people take chances on him? Because he's been in different spots, and he's been to even like a Brooklyn would be a perfect spot for him this year. You would assume, OK, here, we're not going to be very good. We're kind of a developmental team. Here you go. And he hasn't really done anything even on Brooklyn. There's been talks about his work ethic. There's just so many red flags going on with him that I just can't fathom. I mean, I'm sure some team at some point will bring him in for, you know, summer league or tryouts or something like that. But I just don't see him ever being a rotational or even like a regular NBA player anymore. I'd be shocked if it did happen.
Yeah, I mean, his stats, his career stats are...
don't look at them. No, don't. No. Why?
0.12 win shares for 48, 4.4 points per game, 3.1 rebounds, not good. Less than 40% shooting. So, yeah, everything there is pretty awful. I mean, the fact that he can't even get, you know, be on the roster of the worst team in the league is obviously saying something. I mean,
yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it'd be like, yeah, you know, I understand why Cleveland got rid of him. And I see Toronto, you know, they had them last year, but they're working on bigger and better things. But this is Brooklyn. That's like, you know what? We don't need you anymore. That's not good. That's bad.
Yeah. And the obvious comparison, I think, is Leroux Martin, who we'll get into in a few moments. I think we're going to just go through the we decided to go back to 1966, which is the first year that the NBA no longer had the territorial draft. Before then, you know, the territorial picks were allowed before the regular picks. So the drafts are kind of funny. But from 66, basically, you're having the same rules as you have today. So I think it's more of an apples to apples comparison. So we're just going to kind of go through, talk about each player who's drafted number one and get a sense of the variability, because there's a lot of guys who obviously some greatest of all time players like Kareem, LeBron, and all to, you know, your Anthony Bennett and Leroux Martins. So,
yeah, it's interesting. And kind of what spawned this is, you know, of course, with Anthony Bennett, and there are quite a few that we're going to talk about here. But the volatility of like the number one overall pick is very interesting. And I guess maybe we can delve into it a little bit later of why there seems to be so many, or if there is that many. I mean, that's kind of, I guess, the real question, because people kind of look at number one overall picks. And like you said, there are those all-timers, those, you know, all-time greats, top five, top 10, top 15 type players. But there are a lot of guys that are just, you know, I hate the word bust because I don't think that's really fair, but guys that just never lived up to the potential of being a number one overall pick. And a lot of guys that just never lived up to the potential of being like everyday NBA players. And you find it hard to believe that, like, with, you know, that you're picking number one, you have everybody in the world to pick from, and like you pick this guy. And then for some of these people within a few years, it was already like, well, this guy's terrible. Or like in some cases, Anthony Bennett was almost immediate. Leroux Martin was another one too, where like 10 minutes into his first game, I was like, ah, damn it. Well, sorry. Like, shouldn't have done. And like, I'm always fascinated by that, because it's like, you have like anybody in the world you can pick, and you've had all this time and all this resources to do it. But I guess that's it. But you assume that NBA, like, I get it with the football because injuries can happen, and baseball, of course, is super, as you're going through the minor leagues, it's really hard. But basketball, it seems like a very easy one to kind of scout and say, this guy is great, we should draft him number one. But there are so many cases, though, where those guys just don't turn out at all. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously there are some just can't miss guys, you know, that, you know, your greatest ever, you know, who you know are going to be important dominant, you know, given health, of course. And then when it gets slightly below that, that's when it's really tough. I mean, you know, fit obviously matters. You know, the translation between college and the pros, that often is very different styles of games, obviously, especially today. So it is really interesting what guys do well and what guys don't do well. And obviously injuries come into play with a lot of these guys, which you can't really, you know, usually can't predict unless they had issues in college. But right. Yeah, I mean, there are so many factors. It is. Yeah. Other than maybe like the slam dunk level, like, OK, this guy has the talent, and even a couple of those guys, you know, kind of had disappointing NBA careers. You know, but other than that, it is a crapshoot in many cases, even when you're drafting that high.
Absolutely.
So first, 1966, the New York Knicks drafting Cassie Russell from Michigan. And he was part of those early Knicks dynasty teams. He eventually kind of lost a starting spot to Bill Bradley, who had been a college rival with. And he was pretty good off the bench and then ended up with the Warriors and Lakers later on in his career. You know, carved out a solid enough career, you know, played 11 years, had 1.12 inches for 48 throughout his career, you know, 15 points per game. You know, definitely an okay, you know, to pretty good player for his career, but probably disappointing for a number one pick.
Yeah, fine. But yeah, as you're saying, like, we'll go over some guys here. I mean, he's certainly, I don't know what kind of pocket we'd put him in, or if we have this like folders that we're throwing guys in. But yeah, I think he'd, you know, decent, but disappointing is probably the best way to describe him.
Yeah. The next, similar, but probably a little bit worse, Jimmy Walker for the Detroit.
The Dynamite guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Same guy, right?
Jalen Rose is a father, I guess estranged father, but...
But yes, his father is the Dynamite guy. I'm just joking. Sorry, yeah, go on. Sorry, go. I apologize. Sorry.
All right. That's all right.
I will never derail this podcast ever again. Yeah. I apologize.
Richard, you are not giving people what they want right now. So.
Right, sorry.
So, you know, he played most of the career with the Pistons. Was an okay player, you know, 16.7 points per game. Solid enough, but never really fulfilled the potential. But then this is also during a time in which the, you know, actually getting the number one pick, it still wasn't quite the same. Like, I mean, you definitely had as many guys who were number all overall picks to this point were nothing as compared to, you know, what it is later. The league is expanding, and the value of having that number one pick versus a good team that's going to draft at the bottom is going to change as expansion comes along, and as obviously some tremendous talent from this next generation of great players is coming.
And scouting always plays a factor in that as well, because, you know, now we take it so for granted of, you know, you get to see all these guys, everybody sees everybody all across the world or whatever, where a lot of times you hear these old drafts and even a guy we're going to talk about here in a little bit where it's like, yeah, we saw him in a few games, we thought he was good, so that's it. Like, we drafted him, and it's like, all right, well, maybe, I don't know, like, maybe she, but like, it, well, like you're saying, the value that we sort of astounded, I mean, now would be astonishing for us to just think of trading a number one overall pick or not really caring all that much, but like you said, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, in this era, and it starts to get a little bit more important in the next kind of group of people that we see. Maybe because people see, oh, geez, this is really valuable. We should probably use this well.
Yeah, right. I mean, the next three in 68, Elvin Hayes with the San Diego Rockets, 69, Milwaukee Bucks at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Might have heard of him. In 1970, good. Detroit Pistons get Bob Lanier, all our Hall of Famers, all our top 50 players. Obviously, Kareem is in the greatest of all time discussion. Yeah, and these were, well, Kareem was obviously a franchise changing big man. Hayes and Lanier didn't really do well. You know, we have another episode coming up, you know, with Lanier specifically, where, you know, these guys were great individual players, but the team success didn't really come. Hayes later with the Bullets, along with Wes Unseld, that later in the 70s did, and Lanier would be more of a role player on some of those 80s Bucks teams, but. And I guess that kind of separates, you know, Kareem being one of the greatest of all time with Hayes and Lanier, you know, very good, you know, excellent top 50 players, but not quite in the same caliber.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we're talking, it's hard to be compared or, you know, sandwiched with Kareem as the meat of that sandwich, unfortunately, for Hayes and Lanier. But yeah, I mean, decent, really good NBA careers, I'd say, but just not, you know, franchise changing all time greats like a Kareem was. But still, you know, I made a number one all-star pick and I'm just trying to pick Bob Lanier, you know, that's not bad. Yeah. I'll take it. But yeah, no, certainly not the game changer like Kareem. I mean, but there are few are game changers like Kareem. So
yeah, and we talked about Lanier in our top 50 project. I mean, Lanier was, you know, exceptionally productive guy. I mean, really, probably a little bit, you know, underrated for, you know, how well he performed in his career, you know, kind of stuck on those rough Pistons teams.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And next we have Cleveland with Austin Carr, Mr. Cavalier from Notre Dame, one of the greatest college scorers of all time. Unfortunately, not a really strong pro career, you know, cut short with injuries and not really a very efficient scorer in the pros. Did average 15.4 points per game but didn't really stand out much elsewhere. And the highlight of his career was leading the being part of a pretty good group of players that helped lead the Cavs to that miracle of Richfield 76 playoff run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but otherwise, I mean, just kind of a pretty disappointing number one overall pick. Just not a whole lot there. Yeah. As you said, injuries and other issues came into play, but yeah, just not a great number one overall pick. But
yeah, the knee injuries might have changed things for
yeah,
him.
Exactly. But, yeah. I mean, it looked like he had a lot of talent to be great, but it just didn't come together for him.
Yeah. And then next, we talked about before, LaRue Martin for the Portland Trail Blazers out of the Loyola University of Chicago. And he's dealt with a lot in breaks of the game. They're, you know, interesting. This is at the point of the book is being written. He's been out of the league and is trying to kind of get back in. And this is, of course, his burden of expectations being placed on him, being picked number one, even though it seemed like a weird pick at the time. And it definitely, obviously worked out very poorly because he's one of the worst number one overall picks in NBA history.
Yeah, just a lot of things didn't really work out for him. I mean, in breaks of the game and otherwise, you hear that, you know, the Portland's GM, they saw him favor matchup. You know, he had a matchup with Bill Walton and he went, you know, neck and neck with Bill Walton. And that was like, oh, man, well, there you go. I mean, that guy's got to be great. So these GMs, you know, they watched a couple games with him where he really dominated, was pretty good. I mean, yeah, at Loyola, he averaged 18.2 points per game, 15.9 rebounds. So people kind of look at those numbers and they're pretty gaudy numbers and a 6'11 center. And this is, you know, obviously this era where it's, you know, the big men ruled the world. And you know, it played it favorably against, you know, Walton and a few other guys. And then it just didn't work out. I mean, and the problem was, too, it was almost immediate where everybody just kind of knew that this guy just didn't, for whatever it was, it just didn't have it to be in the NBA, whether it was, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily a desire, but maybe a killer instinct, as you hear a lot in the breaks of the game. He was a very nice guy. He was a very humble person. Like, he's still now, people regard him as like the nicest dude. When you interview him, he's just kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, it didn't really work out in the NBA, but whatever. Like most people would really be upset about it, but he kind of goes, I made, you know, a life for myself. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's fine. You know, I didn't work out and that's it. So, and people mentioned him as being that kind of guy, even when he was playing, that it was like, he just didn't have that killer instinct, didn't have that desire to be great. And that, you know, of course, is a number one overall pick. You obviously want that a little bit, but yeah, just a guy who just never really figured it out at all and has some really, really bad numbers for a number one overall pick, but was only in the league, like what, 3 years and then was out. So.
Yeah. I think four seasons, 271 games, 14 minutes per game, 5.3 points. 4.6 rebounds on less than 42% shooting. So obviously not
for a 6'11 center. Not great. No,
not great. No. So the next series of players all dealt with either injuries or drug issues or a mix of both in some cases. 1973 was Doug Collins with the 76ers. 1974 famously was Bill Walton with the Portland Trailblazers. 1975 with David Thompson with the Atlanta Hawks, who did not play for the Atlanta Hawks, which we talked about in a previous episode. And in 1976, John Lucas with the Houston Rockets. So Walton and Collins dealt with a lot of injuries throughout their careers. You know, Collins had some good years with the Sixers. Walton, of course, famously short-lived time with the Trailblazers, but had the brilliant 77 and 78 seasons before the injuries really took their hold. Thompson didn't play for the Hawks. He ended up defecting to the ABA for the Nuggets, and then once the Nuggets joined the NBA the next season, he played, you know, for a few really great years with the Nuggets before the drug issues came in, and then John Lucas in 76 was, you know, really good, a strong point guard for the Rockets. He and actually Doug Collins were famously involved in what was considered a bogus charge call, with Collins taking the charge from Lucas in the 77 playoffs, which if the it had gone the other way, there's a good chance Houston would have gone to the finals instead of the 76ers in 1977. Yeah. So.
Damn Doug.
Yeah.
we always hated Doug Collins.
Foppin' Doug, yep.
Exactly. His old nickname.
Yeah. So I don't know if you have anything to add to those guys, but...
Not really. I mean, Thompson was probably... You know, Thompson and Walton, of course. I mean, we don't really have to say much about those guys. Everybody kind of knows the history of those. I mean, Bill Walton, of course, you know, all-time great player. Just the injuries just absolutely destroyed what was a great... or what was on the path to be a great career. And David Thompson was a guy who, of course, you know, for being an overall player, had a great career. But for the Atlanta Hawks, as the number one overall pick, not so much, because he didn't play at all for them. So that's not great. But no, he carved out a pretty nice career. But of course, yeah, Atlanta probably would have preferred him, you know, do it while playing under their team as opposed to, you know, in another league. But those things happen. And then, yeah, Lucas and Collins, they kind of speak for themselves as well. But yeah, Thompson, solid career. Of course, the drug issues kind of derailed what would have been a decent, like, because he was still a very good player. But then he just, you could see the drop off just happen so fast. And it's like, well, what the hell's going on here? And obviously now we know, you know, of course, the drug issues happen. But yeah, a really, really good overall player. And then Bill Walton, again, you know, a guy who could have been one of the best of all time, but just to injuries and his body just would not let him do it. So
yeah, I mean, still a top 50 player, you know, made that list, and yeah, he still got, yeah, obviously for what he accomplished limited time, obviously some great things. So the next couple of years, some okay to solid players, but disappointments considering, you know, where they were picked. 1977, Milwaukee Bucks selected Kent Benson from Indiana. He was part of that undefeated Indiana team, the last undefeated team in college basketball history. And had a long career in the league, but was never really a star. Most famous probably for his very first game, where he elbowed Kareem in the stomach. Kareem doubled over and then turned around and then knocked him out with a punch. So
welcome to NBA kid.
Yeah, Kareem broke his hand, and then Benson, you know, was obviously got knocked out in the situation. So that's probably the most notable thing. He played a few years with the Bucks and with the Pistons, then I believe with the Jazz. So was kind of, you know, we talked about in our Jordan episode about the white stiffs that dominated the 80s, and I think he was definitely in that club.
Oh God, yes, yeah, yeah. If he was possibly a different guy, I don't know if he would have hung around in the league as long as he did. But no, I mean, it's a decent player, but yeah, just not really what you want from a number one overall pick whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially from Milwaukee, a team that, you know, it was really, really, I mean, at that point too, I mean, they could have really built, you know, even more of a dynasty than they had, and it didn't really, you know, just kind of all started unraveling there.
Yes. And then the 78 draft was Michael Thompson. Funny, I never thought about it, but Portland actually got the number one pick even after, you know, that 78 season where, you know, they had, I guess they had the best record in the league at that point. You know, they had 15-10 start and then they lost Walton, but they got Michael Thompson out of it. I believe that was a trade with the Pacers. So and he had a good, solid career, probably disappointing for number one pick. He was a key role player for the Lakers in their last few years, their dynasty, and he had some good years with Portland. So it wasn't a bad guy, but he definitely probably disappointing for a number one overall pick. It's interesting because I'm not exactly sure what the standard is for disappointing for overall number one overall pick, because, yeah, I mean, obviously you're only going to have a handful of, like, I mean, if you're worse than Magic Johnson, you're not a disappointment, but who do you have?
Exactly, yeah.
Who do you have to be, you know, better than to not be a disappointment? I mean, that's sort of an interesting, because the expectations are so high, but so many more players end up being, like, you know, pretty good than being, you know, all the time. So it's not really fair to think, oh, you have to be LeBron or Magic Johnson or whoever in your disappointment. But I don't know what point you become just like, okay, you're fine. It was fine that we picked you here.
Right. Yeah. That's why it'd be so hard to be like to pick number one and to be a number one overall pick. I can't imagine the amount of pressure of that. And that's what I mean why teams still kind of maybe screw up, because it's just like, oh, everyone's going to second guess no matter what. Like, if this guy, you know, even if Anthony Bennett was, you know, a 10 point per game guy, and we'll talk about a guy here in a little bit that was like, you know, in the modern era, who was like, you know, 9 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, which is, it's fine. Like, it's a solid rotation player. And it's because he was number one overall pick. It was just like, ah, oh, this guy's terrible. It's, oh God, what a bust. What a complete disappointment. And yeah, it's probably not fair. Cause yeah, we're going through this list here, and a lot of the guys we're mentioning is like, they had a good career, but they were a disappointment. And it's like, well, maybe they're not. Maybe just Kareem and Magic Johnson are all time greats. And not, you know, so it's definitely an interesting conversation. That's why it's so fascinating to see the progression here, and why we're doing this episode, to see the progression of number one overall picks and see how how they're sort of perceived as whether disappointments or you know, all-time greats or whatever. But yeah, there's really no middle ground. It's either like we need a franchise-changing player or you're a disappointment. You know what I mean? Or like you're an absolute bust. Like there's like maybe three levels here that we're talking about, and it's kind of funny because, yeah, a guy like Michael Thompson, solid career, but, you know, we consider him disappointing. And whether that's fair or not, I don't know.
Yeah. Next, 1979, the Lakers get Magic Johnson.
What a disappointment that guy was. Jeez. Didn't exactly. move any tickets. Didn't, I mean, just nothing for that franchise. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, absolutely not. 1980, Golden State Warriors get Joe Barry Carroll, nickname of Joe Barely Cares.
All-time great nickname, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, probably an added disappointment because, you know, he was traded. You know, the Warriors could have had Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish, who they already had, but they traded them both for Carroll. And he had some actually productive, okay years, not good in the advanced stats overall. I mean, he was definitely still a major disappointment. Did have 1 year as an all-star. Middle of his career, went over to Italy and played for a year in Italy, which is kind of interesting, you know, given that a star of, you know, his stature to do that. I think it was a contract situation where, you know, it was basically a holdout. But so yeah, I'm you know, not that much, but he carved out, you know, a 11 year career. You know, what was definitely doesn't belong on the list of like the worst busts ever, but is more in that like one tier up where it was a disappointment, but because I don't think he was good enough to be considered like a, you know, a good solid player, but he was not bad enough to be considered, you know, a total bust either.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree.
1981, Dallas Mavericks got Mark Aguirre. Another good player with solid career, probably disappointing for a number one overall pick, although, you know, he did lead Dallas to some pretty good help, you know, with some other good players, Orlando Blackman and so forth in the 80s for the Mavericks. And then, of course, went over to the Pistons and was there for their two championships. So in the controversial trade for Adrian Dantley, but probably was the right call for them at that point, because Aguirre ended up having more longevity and, you know, probably helped them to be able to win that title. So, yeah, I mean, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe he's about like the right where it's like kind of the minimum expectation you might have for a number one overall pick. Like Mark Aguirre might be that guy.
Yeah, like a solid career, helped the team, you know, go to many playoffs. Like, yeah, like a solid rotation piece, a guy that you could just pluck into your lineup, yeah, and he was good to go from, you know, the beginning and ready to produce for you guys from the beginning. I mean, not a developmental project, really, just a guy that was came yeah. in ready to go and made that team. I mean, made pretty much any team he was on better by being on it, and that's really all you can ask, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, he was an all-star, a guy who led, you know, some good playoff teams. Obviously, he had some issues with there was some locker room issues between there and some ego stuff, and there was that aspect to him as well. But it, probably on the court, yeah, it's probably about what I would want. You know, 20 points per game, 5 rebounds per game. 48% shooting. You know, pretty decent numbers overall. So yeah, I think he's probably about like maybe the median outcome or so.
Yeah. Good.
Next, 1982, James Worthy. He's a guy, the numbers don't stand out, but he obviously was a really important part he had good numbers. But, you know, he's on the top 50 list and a Hall of Famer, and, you know, just ended up being in the perfect situation for him as far as complementing his skills and, you know, and delivering in, especially in big situations, obviously the 1988 game 7 triple double. So, you know, that obviously worked out pretty well. You know, they had other options there, like Dominic Wilkins and, you know, some other things. I think they were looking at trying to get Ralph Sampson to come out early as well. So things like that. So, so probably Worthy was the best of those options, even if it wasn't necessarily the best overall player.
Yeah, I love the idea. I mean, can you imagine what would happen now if a team won the NBA championship and then had the number one overall pick? Like, can you even fathom like the outcry that would occur for something like that? I just it would be amazing, but it
certainly would.
I mean, could you just like the Cavs just like, all right, cool, number one overall pick, all right, Ben Simmons. It's like, no, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I just love this idea that like now we talk about these super teams, but that's, again, we talk about how teams just didn't value these things properly, because like teams would just trade away these picks and do all this sort of stuff. It's like, ah, who needs a draft pick, whatever, just give us that 32-year-old guy that's reliable. And it's like, all right, fine, we'll just get James Worthy and add him to a team that just won the championship. So that's it's pretty good though, but I do love old NBA the old Wild West of NBA trades and NBA draft trades and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it'd be incredible. I just would love to see the outcry 1 year if that happened. You know, some team just I feel like the closest we got was like that Nets barrage where they were just trading every pick they had for like 10 years. That was pretty fun. But
that was pretty fun.
I don't know.
Memories. Yes. And
yeah,
then,
the good old days.
And it ends up with not having Anthony Bennett on your team.
It all comes full circle.
Yeah, it does. So 83 and 84, the Rockets draft their two twin towers, Ralph Sampson in 83, Hakeem Olajuwon in 84. Obviously, Hakeem worked out tremendously well, you know, although it took a while. We got another show where we're going to talk about how there was a period. Well, they did have immediate success and made the 86 finals, but that there ended up being some a lull period before, you know, the great teams of the mid 90s. For Sampson, you know, was a guy who just, you know, was one of the most hyped college players of all time, was tremendous in college and was pretty good for a brief time. Although interestingly enough, his career win shares for 48 are worse than Purvis Ellison, Joe Barry Carroll, and Kwame Brown. So, you know, he's a guy who's thought of as being, you know, pretty productive in the NBA and, you know, before injuries, you know, really got to him. But, The advanced numbers are not strong for him, and I don't know exactly what to make of that other than, you know, just the you know, maybe it was rough playing with Olajuwon because he maybe, you know, play some out of position or things like that. I don't know, but because he actually was stronger, at least production wise, before Olajuwon got there. So, or maybe the injuries were taking a toll even before, you know, the serious ankle one that he basically derailed his career.
And his shooting was always, I mean, it wasn't a great shooter, so that probably played into a little bit of it because he was a guy that didn't play as much like around the basket as we kind of assume. He was a guy that, you know, was out a little bit doing some stuff and was always kind of in between his game too because he kind of wanted to be more of a shooter and they wanted to be more down low, and that kind of causes issues as well. But yeah, the advanced numbers never really like Ralph Sampson, which is kind of funny because, yeah, I wouldn't initially think of him as a bust, but then you put him in, like, you know, the Kwame Brown, Joe Barry Carroll region, and it's like, oh, okay, I don't know. Like, that's, you know, so it's definitely an interesting thing with him.
Yeah, I mean, I would not consider him a bust, but it's just worth noting, hey, the advanced just do not like him for whatever reason. So then next we get, you know, after Olajuwon, we get a really great run of big men. Patrick Ewing for the Knicks in 85, obviously Hall of Famer, top 50 player. 1986, Cleveland Cavaliers, Brad Doherty. Really, you know, production-wise, on a very similar level to these other guys, to Ewing, Olajuwon, and David Robinson's kind of on another level, at least as far as the advanced sets go, but but he really just didn't have that longevity because of the, you know, the injuries that he dealt with. But he was right there with Ewing, certainly as far as how he, you know, produced, you know, while he was playing.
Yeah, it's crazy to look at how long some of these other guys, we're talking about, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, retired in 2002, Patrick Ewing 2002, David Robinson 2003, Brad Doherty 1994. So you look at that, like, geez, those guys had almost another decade of their careers, and Brad Doherty just doesn't have that. But yeah, like on a per, you know, win shares per 48 and like a advanced metrics, like he's right there with them. It's just he doesn't have those extra decade or whatever like some of those other guys have. And I mean, obviously, knowing what we know about, you know, he probably would not have lasted or whatever, you know, but a hypothetical is if he keeps up, you know, kind of the same path he had, you know, pre-injury or, you know, pre-having to retire, he maybe could have been thought of as one of those guys. But yeah, I mean, as a per game level, I mean, absolutely worthy of being a number one overall pick and produced, you know, as well or in some cases even better than some of those guys.
Yeah, and helped, you know, turn around the Cavs, you know, who were not a good team before 86, and
kind of
sparked that turnaround, of course, along with, you know, Mark Price and Larry Nance and those guys. So after that, 1988, Danny Manning, very hyped out of college, out of Kansas, played for the Clippers. Good, solid career, but he had dealt with some knee injuries, I believe, and, you know, kept them from him being, you know, an excellent player, but, you know, kind of had a, you know, a pretty good, was part of some pretty good Suns teams in the late 90s, and, you know, was good, but disappointment considering the hype that he came in with.
Yeah, he bounced around a lot too, which I think was another issue with his career. Is like he seemed like he was on a bunch of, I mean, of course there wasn't that many, obviously you have the Clippers, you have the brief stint in Atlanta, Phoenix, and then, you know, at the end of his career, which I won't count, you know, then he bounced around to a bunch of different places. But I think that also kind of hurts his legacy as well, because like I don't know, like if you had to tell me, you know, what Danny Manning's like team, like who did, you know, of course he got drafted by the Clippers, but I would probably say the Suns was like his team. But like he just has weird identity where like I don't know that he's necessarily remembered for being, you know, a member of any one team for very long, and just kind of bounced around a little bit as well, even though it wasn't that he wasn't a journeyman until kind of the end of his career, but still just kind of bounced around a little bit more than what you would assume kind of a number one overall pick or a very good number one overall pick would.
Yeah, definitely. So 1989, one of the more notorious number one picks of all time, Sacramento Kings. Purvis Ellison out of Louisville. One of your favorite nicknames, I know.
Yeah, never nervous Purvis. That's, I believe, one of the worst nicknames in basketball history. What is your take on never nervous Purvis?
It's not great, but I'm not sure what else you have to, you know, go with Purvis. You know,
that doesn't mean anything. Like, it just be Purvis Ellison. Like, I don't know.
He could be, you know.
I guess having not watched him at old Louisville, I can't say like that he was, because if he was a guy that was like legitimately never nervous, then I get it. Like, you're like, wow, that guy's never nervous. And, you know, his name's Purvis. So I get it from that standpoint, but it just seems kind of forced. It seemed like we had to come up with something to rhyme with Purvis. Okay, nervous. There we go. We're done.
Yeah,
like,
but nervous doesn't make sense. So it has to be never nervous. You know,
yeah, right. Getting nervous Purvis, because that's not good. Nobody's going to draft you if you're nervous Purvis. I mean, no one's going to draft you number one overall and expect you to be a star for the Sacramento Kings like Purvis Ellison became. So we're good.
Yeah, I believe that was during Bill Russell's short-term stint being the coach and GM of the Kings, which did not go well. So
no, it did not, because Purvis did not was not good.
Yes, Danny Ainge referred to him as out of service Purvis. Which
then that's a good nickname. Yeah, even though I don't like Danny Ainge, I like that nickname. So
it's fair enough.
I wonder if he said it to his face, because I feel like Purvis would not be very happy with that.
Probably not a nice thing to do.
But Danny Ainge isn't a nice person, so it's fine.
That's probably true. He played 474 games in 12 seasons, so, or 11 seasons, so
I mean, it's kind of funny though. He you know, his rookie year he had a ton of issues, and Sacramento just immediately traded him, which is always kind of fun. There in 1991 he became a starter and was named the NBA most improved player. He averaged 20 points per game, 11.4 rebounds per game, so looked like he had something there. And then like the knee injuries just persisted, and he just never ever could fit it, you know, figure it out. But that one year you kind of got a glimpse into like, this guy could be okay, and it just never came together for him though.
Yeah, definitely. So next, 1990, Derek Coleman with the New Jersey Nets. Good player with a solid career. Probably disappointing for the number one pick. Similar for 91 with the Charlotte Hornets, Larry Johnson. And both these guys didn't necessarily stay, you know, super long with their original teams. Obviously, Larry Johnson ended up going to the Knicks. And Derek Coleman ended up bouncing around here and there a little bit. I mean, Coleman, you know, those early Nets teams had some potential. Obviously, Drazen Petrovic dying, you know, the fatal crash, you know, kind of helped, you know, keep that team from, you know, growing, you know, naturally together along with Kenny Anderson. You know, that might have been a different story had that not happened. But he was always kind of, I don't know, he was kind of considered, you know, a little mercurial, maybe a little bit of the, you know, kind of the Boogie Cousins of his day. I think Boogie showed a little bit more, you know, like, dynamism, and excitement. But like, I think Coleman was right there in terms of just being like this incredibly graceful, athletic big man who seemed like, you know, he was there to dominate the league. And, you know, he played well, 16.5 points per game, 9.3 rebounds. I mean, he was above average player, but it may be a little bit disappointing for that level.
Yeah, fairly or unfairly, he always got the tag as like, oh man, you could be so much better, like, just be better. And he was like, he doesn't, like, it was always that he didn't want to be better, that he was lazy or whatever. And I think he was, I've seen him recall, he was just kind of like, well, I don't know, like, I'm just kind of doing what I do. Like, he was very much like a guy that just kind of played his game and did his thing or whatever. And people just, because they saw that what he was able to do and what he was able to do on the court and this freak athleticism that he had when he was younger, and thought, okay, this guy can be awesome and can be great. And he just never reached that great level. And people always just attribute that to laziness or you know, aloofness or whatever. But it could have just been that was the ceiling. But he was still a very, very good overall player, solid career, but disappointed many, many franchises. I think, you know, three or four different teams were like, all right, we got Derek Coleman, let's go. And it was like, oh, all right, never mind. Like, he's not that great. He's not that type of player, but still, I'd say a pretty solid career. Larry Johnson as well. He's a guy that remembered very well from the 90s for playing for the Charlotte Hornets, for the grandma stuff, for being a very dynamic player, but really fell off a cliff pretty quickly once injuries got him and once he kind of went to the Knicks. I mean, had a little bit going at his first few years with the Knicks, but yeah, just did not have the longevity that you would think. But solid player. I don't know, a decent number one overall pick, I guess, but not, I don't know if Charlotte got quite what they probably would want out of Larry Johnson, other than probably sold a lot more starter jackets because of him. So
those Hornets starter jackets were like a hot thing. They really were. Yeah, I mean, he was a marketing, you know, superstar. Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, I mean, he's kind of considered the next Charles Barkley, I think, sort of, you know, for a while. At least he kind of had a similar, you know, frame and, you know, style, at least, you know, kind of appeal. He was kind of the bad boy in college with that UNLV team. So, Yeah, Larry Johnson. I think he's a guy. He maybe got lost a little bit in the dust bit of history, but was an important player for a while, even if he was not super successful.
Yeah.
92, of course, Shaquille O'Neal with the Orlando Magic, one of the greatest ever. I guess, he left the Magic so quickly that would be the only thing that would be, the only regret there is they weren't able to keep him beyond the 4 years. But he obviously, was performed well, got them to the finals, was, probably top 15 player ever, no regrets there. Definitely the kind of thing you want to land on when you get a Hall of Famer.
Exactly. Yeah, that was kind of a no-doubter as well. So it kind of worked. But I guess maybe not a no-doubter. You never know. It could have been weight issues or something like that if it came in. But yeah, no, I mean, like, obviously the Magic were going to take him when they took him. Obviously everybody kind of pointed to him of being like that great, great player. And I think he absolutely lived up to all of it. Yeah, like you're saying, Orlando maybe didn't get the whole end of that they wanted.
Right.
But still, I would say, I mean, the years that they did have him, as short as they were, one of the premier NBA franchises, NBA finals appearance, that sort of stuff. So they, I mean, drafting him, and they immediately were on a championship, sort of track right off the bat. And that's all you can really ask for number one overall pick, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. 93, Orlando Magic. They end up trading him, Chris Webber out of Michigan. And he's a likely Hall of Famer to me. Some would consider him maybe, a bit disappointing in his career. He did have he bounced around a little. I mean, he ended up with Golden State for a year, had the issues with Don Nelson, then ended up in Washington for a few seasons before settling in to Sacramento and being part of the great teams there. And, he had some, had some tremendous skills, obviously, for his size, and great passer and a great player. It took a while for him to actually be on a winning team, but once he was able to establish that, Sacramento obviously had a great run, didn't make the finals, but only because they were behind one of the great dynasties of all time.
Yeah, no, I'd say a solid number one overall pick. What are your thoughts? It's probably a larger topic, but I've seen a lot of it recently where people always talk about, oh man, Shaq and Webber would have been just a great combo as opposed to Shaq and Penny or whatever. I kind of like the Shaq Penny dynamic a little bit more than the Webber O'Neal. I don't know if I quite see how the Webber O'Neal works, but what do you think about that? Would you have stuck with Webber, or are you okay with the? Yes, we're doing revisionist history from things from like 30 years ago, but have traded? That's what we do. This is this whole podcast is, so whatever. Screw it, we're doing it. Would you have kept Webber, or would you have make the trade for Penny?
I think Shaq Penny was, that was a great combination. I think those skills really blendable. I don't see Webber really fitting in with Shaq that well. I mean, he wasn't that much of an outside shooter, if I recall correctly. And there were other things. I mean, he obviously had great passing and great talent, but I mean, not only did they get Penny Hardaway, who was, better than Webber, up until 98, 99, for sure, I would say. And they got like two or three first round picks for him in addition to that. So, I mean, I think, yeah, considering all the factors in that deal, I definitely would have done that. Yeah, I don't see Webber. I mean, they're so talented. Yeah, maybe they could have made it work, but I don't know if like it's the best way to optimize your team, or having someone like Penny Hardaway, who, again, was tremendous up until, he had his own injuries. I think that was definitely a better fit. Personality wise, I don't know. I don't know if Webber and Shaq would have really gotten along any better than Penny and Shaq did. So.
Yeah, I like the Penny Shaq dynamic a little bit more than the Webber one. Webber, it would have been fun because everybody thinks, oh, the point forward, all that sort of stuff. But I like the dynamic of Penny and Shaq. So I am with you, Orlando Magic general manager. I will keep. I forgot his name. Name escapes me right now, but he made the right trail.
Yeah, exactly. Next we have the big dog, Glenn Robinson. He solid player. Good, probably disappointing for a number one overall pick. The advanced stats don't like him all that much, although he did average 20.7 points per game. I recall him, but he was part of some, solid teams. Obviously the, I guess the early 90s Bucks were not the best.
It wasn't until really Ray Allen kind of emerged. I mean, he was a good part of those teams, but it was not until they found a better player, they were terrible. Once they got a few different players, Cassell came in and Ray Allen, obviously emerged. That's when they got good. So he kind of was better as the third option than being the first option, but still a dynamic score. I mean, people kind of forget how much he scored. A lot of it was empty, as you're saying, with the stats. But I mean, you look at his career, 20 points per game overall. Like, that's not bad considering those last few years. I mean, he was basically, on stilts last year in Sacramento or San Antonio, rather. He had a weird like stint in Philadelphia, if I remember correctly, too. So, but yeah, as a Milwaukee Buck, a solid career, was always there, reliable to score. But Yeah, not necessarily the best team winner type player. So,
yeah, didn't have a lot of longevity either. I mean, he only played only 11 seasons, which is a decent career. But, you know, the contemporaries around him generally had longer careers. So that's one, you know, minor blip in, you know, there. But, yeah, I mean, solid enough. Probably, like I said, a little disappointing, but, you know, he's still a pretty good player. I think also 95, Joe Smith would probably be in that category as well. And he ended up only played a couple years with Golden State before he moved on, and he bounced around, you know, everywhere. But, you know, I mean, he had a reasonably he had a decent enough career, but, you know, 11 points, 6.4 rebounds for his career. A lot of that, you know, toward the end was in a small role. So that probably depressed that a little bit, but, you know, not getting a whole lot, didn't necessarily get a whole lot out of that.
And it's a weird draft, too. If you actually look at that history of that draft, the 95 draft, and there are some very good players in there, but it's like, you know, Joe Smith, per, like, overall win shares, I think he ranks, like, seventh. Or, yeah, I'm looking at it. He ranks seventh, because we got, obviously, Garnett, Rasheed Wallace, Michael Finley. Then, I mean, like, Brent Berry, Antonio McDice, Kurt Thomas, you know, Damon Stoudemire, Jerry Stackhouse. You know, Joe Smith's right in the middle of all those guys. You know, like, people think of him as kind of this all-time bust or whatever, and it's like, yeah, Kevin Garnett was an insane risk, and I understand why, you know, you wouldn't have picked him number one if you're Golden State. And then, you know, no, there's not really, I don't know, like Rasheed was great, but I get why there was some, you know, reservations about getting him. And, you know, Michael Finley wasn't picked till, you know, 21st. He was obviously a guy that a lot of people passed up. Brent Berry is Brent Berry. I mean, whatever. Antonio McDice was fine. So, like, you know, I mean, like, we look at Joe Smith as an all-time bust because he wasn't, like, you know, his number one overall pick, and he wasn't that great, and he didn't stick with that team very long. But that was not a draft that was just, like, brimming with, like, game-changing talent, other than, you know, a Garnett and a Wallace maybe are the only two guys you really look at.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, NBA Trades did a nice podcast looking at that Warriors team and kind of looking at, you know, comparing Joe Smith to the other guys in that class. And that's a recommended one from a few months ago. If anyone wants to check that out, our good friends at NBA Trades, a great, great podcast. Next, a couple pretty good players in 1996, the 76ers, Allen Iverson, and even better, 1997, San Antonio Spurs get Tim Duncan, probably top 15, definitely top 15, yeah. top 10 player ever. Iverson, you know, top 50 player, or at least, you know, in that conversation for sure. I think he did end up making our list that we did. So, you know, two Hall of Famers, two great picks, obviously, you know, Duncan, you know, being perfect for the Spurs, Iverson, you know, getting Philly, you know, to a certain level, and, you know, and obviously being revolutionary in an off the court way even more than on the court, although, you know, obviously played in a, you know, was an exciting player as well, at least when, you know, he was making shots. But but yeah, obviously those are about as successful. I mean, Duncan's as successful as you can imagine, and Iverson was obviously plenty successful as well.
Yeah, and team success, too, you look at for both of those guys. Of course, Tim Duncan speaks for itself. We don't have to say much about the Spurs. And then, you know, Iverson, you know, for what it's worth, you know, whatever he was. I mean, he got that team to the NBA Finals and got them more success and more notoriety than they had in you know, almost an entire decade after just kind of faltering there throughout the 90s. So, yeah, definitely exactly what you want out of your number one overall picks. And no complaints on either one of those guys. You know, all-time greats, both of them.
Yeah. 1998, LA Clippers. Michael Olowokandi, yeah, not real good. Yeah, he has the worst win shares per 48 of any of these players, 0.09. So, not a strong career. He did, yeah. I mean, I guess his per game stats were, I mean, not good, but not for the Clippers. At least, weren't terrible. 9.9 points per game, 8.0 rebounds per game. But yeah, couldn't. Could not get the ball in the basket very well. And, you know,
no.
I mean, he, you know, he played for generally bad teams for his career. So, yeah, the Candyman, not so sweet.
Not so much. There was a great quote I found Kareem was talking about when he was coaching, because he was an assistant coach for the Clippers around this time that he had Olowokandi. And this is a great quote about Olowokandi. When I coached the Clippers, I had to deal with Michael Olowokandi, a player who perfectly fit the description, talented but uncoachable. At practice, I would attempt to point out Mr. Olowokandi's faults to him. I love how he calls him Mr. Olowokandi. But once he constantly repeated and resulted in lost possessions for the team or personal fouls that send him to the bench. His reaction to my attempts to correct his bad habits was to take my input as a personal insult and embarrassment. He told me point blank that he would not be criticized in front of the team. He stuck to his word and as a result had very few successful moments on the court playing the way he wanted to play. He took his place on the list of athletically gifted washouts who have been in and out of the league in the past 10 years. So there's Kareem eloquently burying like a little candy. So that's
yes, yes. So next, 1999 Chicago Bulls, Elton Brand, very good underrated player. Didn't obviously was traded from the Bulls a couple years later, went to the Clippers and had some good run. And unfortunately, he probably had another few years of elite play, but that was cut short because of a, I believe, an ACL injury. Still, to me, he's borderline Hall of Fame, I would say. I think there's
an argument for interesting case. Yeah, he's a very interesting case because that guy was super productive for quite a few years as well. I mean, of course, you look at that right as he's kind of getting into his prime, too. With the Clippers, you know, you start running into a few different issues. And then, of course, when he goes to Philadelphia, it kind of all falls apart from then on. But yeah, he's a guy who very, very interesting career for him, whether he's a Hall of Famer or not, because the numbers are there. They're gaudy. And he had success, too. I mean, those Clippers teams were good with him as, you know, without a doubt, the best player on them. It's just, yeah, injuries kind of derailed any of that. So he'll be a very interesting case when it's time or when people kind of discuss him a little bit more.
Yeah. 2000 New Jersey Nets, Kenny Martin, good player with a solid career, but you know, probably disappointing for a number one overall pick. I mean, was a he had exactly a 0.100 win shares. So exactly that's kind of like I would consider average. Like anything above that's, you know, like you good getting to great. Anything below that is probably bad. So that's I guess he's right at the average part, you could say.
Yeah, that's the horrendous draft. I would not advise anybody ever to eat and then look at the 2000 NBA draft. Probably Hedo Turkoglu is the number one win share player. Hedo Turkoglu followed by Mike Miller. So that's all you need to know. Jamal Crawford's in there. I love that.
Yeah.
The Jamal Crawford just kind of slipped in there, and then Michael Redd, and then Kenyon Martin. So that tells you about how bad that draft is.
So. Yeah. So all things considered, Kenyon Martin, I guess, wasn't a bad.
No, I mean, this is a really bad draft, man. Like there's nobody that's good in the draft. Like of those guys, like even if like Hedo Turkoglu is your best player in your draft, like that's probably not a good thing that you don't want to do. So
yeah,
it gave us Jamal Crawford, and that's all the things we can ever get. So
yeah, in 98 through 01-02, just generally not good drafts there for a while.
No. Stromile Swift was the number 2 overall pick, people. That's all you have to, all you have to know. Jake Poshkal.
There was a weird dearth for a while, you know, before LeBron obviously came in and changed everything. But before we get there, 2001, Washington Wizards select Kwame Brown, first number one overall pick straight out of high school. Famously was berated by Michael Jordan, who was had been the Wizards owner, was his teammate.
That Michael Jordan?
Yeah, that Michael Jordan. Yeah, that one. Yes.
No, stop. Michael Jordan is a very tender, nice.
Not Michael B. Jordan, the actor, but just Michael Jordan. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say that one. That guy seems very nice. But yeah, the Michael Jordan, the basketball player, is kind of a dick. So that makes sense.
There you go. He actually showed like flashes of potential here and there. And you look at his career numbers and like, I mean, they're not good, but they're not like absolutely the worst. So, you know, he carved out a, you know, decent, like, okay, you know, big man type role. Okay, role player for the Lakers and, you know, kind of later on in his career. But obviously not what you want out of a number one overall pick.
Yeah, just never really. I think a lot of it was the NBA lifestyle, too, as a high schooler. I just wasn't ready for that. And I don't mean he was out like partying, doing all that sort of stuff. But I think it's just like such a culture shock for a lot of these people okay, now I'm in the NBA. This is my job. It's a professional. Like, I can't imagine me at 18 trying to do something like that. I mean, I just couldn't have handled it. And you could see that, too. There was just like he seemed like the guy on the court that anytime he was on, he was thinking of like 10,000 things were going through his head and he just could never quite get it together. So I'm sure that ended up being a big issue for Kwame. So.
So next, for the Houston Rockets, Yao Ming, excellent player, obviously great importance by being, you know, the first player picked number one overall from China and, you know, still made the Hall of Fame, even though his career was cut short by injuries. But, you know, I think even despite the injuries, I think he was a tremendous success for the Rockets.
Yeah, of course, and only if anything from a marketing standpoint as well. Just a guy that was such an important player to the NBA's global expansion. But yeah, I think there's, I mean, unquestioned, a great pick for them. And yeah, of course, the injuries kind of ruined what could have been all time great career. But still, they had a good little run there here and there. They made the playoffs a bunch of times. You know, they got pretty far in the playoffs a few times. It was just he just could never stay healthy. But I still think they would never regret that pick. I mean, I think that was absolutely the right pick at the time, and definitely a worthy of being the number one overall pick. I mean, it would be silly to pass up on a Yao Ming if you're Houston. I mean, that would be real tough to do. So not bad. Good pick, Houston. So
yes, definitely good. So 2003, Cleveland Cavaliers, LeBron James, you know, he worked out all right, I would say. Pretty good.
You know, I think I would have gone with Darko Milicic.
You know, okay, yeah.
I mean, you got so much potential there with Darko, man. I mean, I LeBron's all right, but imagine Darko in Cleveland. It's a whole different dynamic. I mean, of course, he's in Detroit and he doesn't get to play. That's why he's not good. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if he just went to a team that was terrible, he could have been great. I mean, it makes so much sense. Or Michael Sweetney's another guy, too. Jeez.
Oh, Michael Sweetney. Yeah, definitely. I think Michael Sweetney's right. Definitely somebody that the Cavs should have picked. Yeah, that's a good call, Rich. Yeah.
Jarvis Hayes. I didn't know that Jarvis Hayes. Wow, he was 10th in that draft.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently, his nationality is United States and Qatar. I believe that is because he probably plays for a team in Qatar. That's one of my favorite things ever is when, like, dudes get, like, dual citizenship.
Yeah.
In places where they definitely don't actually live or aren't actually from, like Jarvis Hayes in Qatar. So there you go.
Hey, good old Jarvis Hayes. 2004 Orlando Magic. Dwight Howard also worked out pretty well for the Magic. Of course, that did not end well, but led them to a finals appearance and some great success and some Defensive Player of the Year awards and all that. Obviously, future Hall of Famer, top 50 candidate. So, you know, despite the bitter divorce, you would make that pick every time, I would think.
No, absolutely, certainly.
2005, Andrew Bogut for Milwaukee Bucks. He's been a good player with a solid career, some very strange politics, but we won't get into that. I would say maybe slightly disappointing for a number one overall pick. I think injuries had to do with that, too. I mean, he was really on track for, you know, kind of something special before, you know, that bad hand and wrist, you know, breaking his arm when he did and, you know, kind of made him. His scoring never really, you know, kind of came back after that. But he did other things well, and obviously he was an important part of Golden State's two finals runs and, you know, carved out a good career. Probably maybe like a very, very slightly disappointing, I would say, and probably only because the Bucks didn't really get they got the best, you know, like production out of him. But, you know, the most successful years of his career obviously were elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, you look at this draft, obviously Chris Paul's a guy who's sixth out, and it's like, oh, geez. But, yeah, no, two other teams, or three other teams, rather. Missed out on him. Milwaukee, Atlanta, and Utah right. Picked different guys. Utah.
Oh, Atlanta didn't pick Chris Paul. Thanks for reminding me.
Oh, sorry.
Really?
I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. Well, he could have gotten Ike Diagu. You got Marvin Williams. He's fine, right? He's a pretty solid player for the Utah Jazz right now. So right,
he exists. So that's true. I agree.
He could have gotten Rashad McCants. I mean, it could have been Sean May. I mean, there are plenty of terrible players you could have got. But no, yeah,
yeah,
Chris. Yeah, sorry, I apologize. But yeah, Bogut, not bad. I mean, I at the time I remember that being a big debate about him. But a guy that I think you know I fit well in Milwaukee when he did, and like you're saying, a lot of production until the injuries kind of caught up. So no, I'm okay with that pick. I think that's not a bad one, but. Chris Paul might have been better, but Marvin Williams is obviously the worst pick of all time. So,
yeah, right, exactly. So,
unquestionably the worst pick ever.
Unquestionably. 2006 Toronto Raptors, Andrea Bargnani. Looked at one point like, okay, maybe he'll figure it out, but it never really happened. And then things got really depressing once he went to the Knicks. So,
yeah, we should probably just not talk about that.
Yeah, we don't want to.
We have too
anybody.
Many Knicks fan listeners. They would die.
Yeah, things have been going well for them. We don't want to make their pain any worse. So,
I take great pleasure in their pain, but other than
right,
that,
right,
know.
Right. Yeah. So we'll move on to Feel Good Story of Greg Oden with the Portland Trailblazers.
<Damn it. laughs>
No.
Oh, God, it's a terrible. We got a bad run here. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, Oden was very good when he actually played, but unfortunately was limited to play very little for the litany of injuries for the Blazers. Played basically the equivalent of one full season for them, and then did manage after 3 years, managed to come back and played a bit with the Miami Heat in LeBron's last season there, and didn't produce a whole lot, but it was just nice to see him on the court and be healthy and and so forth. Unfortunately, he's also had some personal issues and domestic violence situation. And, you know, I'm an Ohio State person, as you know, Rich, and most people listening probably know, and was excited for him coming out. And, you know, obviously, unfortunately, disappointing for him for his career. But hopefully, hopefully he'll turn things around. He seems like despite the off court issues that he's had, he has always seemed like a nice guy. And hopefully that's actually true.
Yeah, and revisionist history will say, oh, man, Durant, how could you pass up on Durant? But, I mean, Oden was an absolute monster when he got on the court and a guy, yeah. Of course, we're remembering the times. Of course, now in today's NBA, of course, you wouldn't pick a guy like a Greg Oden number one. But even then, I mean, 2007, we're still talking about a time when it's like, this guy is huge. He's dominant. You know, he could score, you know, close to the basket and get every rebound. And it was just health. I mean, it really was. I mean, he was productive anytime he got on the court until, you know, he just couldn't walk anymore. And then his production fell off. But even then, like, there were still those little spurts where he'd come back and be like, oh, man, here we go. oh, Greg Oden. And then he just could never stay on the court for any length of time. So, you know, of course, the revision history will always say, oh, God, how do you pass up on Durant? That's a, you know, all-time great player or whatever. But at the time, I remember being in the camp of like, no, you got to get a guy like a Greg Oden. I mean, that's a guy who comes around once in a lifetime. It just so happened we didn't know that. Kevin Durant was like this skinny, like he still is. You know, he's this skinny, like, what are you doing? You're shooting threes and you're like 7 foot type of guy. But it ended up working out pretty well, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think people realized Durant was going to be likely to be special, but I think that Oden was just somebody who it looked like on the defensive end could really, you know, just make a huge difference and be a really could have been a game changer defensively and could have really been a very, you know, could have been a Hall of Fame level player. I think you had the potential to do that. I mean, obviously it would have taken a long successful career, but I think he had that level of talent. And obviously the injuries just, you know, made things work terribly. So next, not super exciting. Derrick Rose, 2008.
It gets better soon. We promise. We won't depress any other fan bases here.
Was an excellent player for a short time, but then of course felled by injuries. Won the MVP. Interestingly, may become the first MVP since Bob McAdoo not to make the Hall of Fame, which would be, you know, pretty incredible. But
yeah, I wrote an article about that for Heart of Roxism when we were housed there, and yeah, it was kind of interesting. I heard that question posed by somebody and I kind of thought about it. I was like, oh geez, yeah, that's true. He is like, he would probably be, I think unquestionably will probably be the only MVP ever, you know, to not make the Hall of Fame. So it's very interesting. It's very fascinating too. Who knows? I mean, yeah, the trajectory that he's on now, I mean, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but it's hard to say. I don't know. But, yeah, it'd be shocking if he did make it at this point. It'd just be shocking again to have an MVP not make it. But that's unfortunately what happens when you're great at, you know, 22 and then you kind of injuries, derail you from there and you never kind of get it back at any point.
Yeah, and then the more recent draft picks, 2009 Blake Griffin, 2010 John Wall with the Wizards, 2011 Kyrie Irving with the Cavs, and 2012 Anthony Davis with the Hornets.
All busts. Every single one of them busts. Yeah.
Right. The then New Orleans Hornets, now New Orleans Pelicans. Those obviously all have been, you know, Davis has been monstrously successful and the other ones have been very good. Blake's been great. You know, Wall, Wall's been really good. I mean, maybe he might be the only argument of like maybe slightly underperform expectations. I think the other guys, and he's still really good and their most important player.
He's still great. I mean, that's the thing. Those other guys are like Blake Griffin, obviously, you know, can propel that team and be a big part of that team being, you know, great. You know, Kyrie Irving, of course, you know, speaks for himself after the NBA Finals, of course, Anthony Davis. But yeah, John Wall is still like a guy that, you know, personally, I don't think he's you know, I've had debates with friends all the time about a John Wall or whatever, but he's still like, as an overall pick, I mean, that's still a guy that you're not really disappointed by that guy being your number one overall pick. I mean, it could be well worse than that. And he's fine. He's a solid player, you know, a dynamic, great player that you look at and go, okay, at some point, if we get maybe the right people around him, he can be good. But yeah, by himself, I mean, he's fine. Absolutely a fine player and fine number one pick. So,
yeah. So 2013, Anthony Bennett, yeah, things did not start well for him and pretty much got worse throughout the, you know, didn't really get any better.
No, that's, he famously started his career, and I know if anybody who was around, this was a big thing, and then unfortunately, like, the fans caught onto it too, which was terrible. He started his career 0-15. His first game, he was 0-5, then he was 0-3, and then it just kept going on for there. He made his first NBA shot in his fifth game. And he was 1-for-5 that game. So at the end of that game, he was 1-of-20 in his NBA career. I mean, that's when you pretty much everybody kind of went, oh no, this is not going to go well, is it? But there was still hope. He had his first double-digit scoring game, 33 games into his career. But then it just never got together. There was issues about his work ethic. It never, ever, ever seemed to flow very well with Anthony Bennett. Now, as we mentioned, he's, you know, cut from his fourth NBA team. Just 23 games played this year, 5.0 points per game, 3.4 rebounds per game. For the worst team in the league with pretty much the least amount of talent, so that's not good when you're cut from the worst team that has no talent. It might be the end of the road for you. So
yeah, and then since 2014 the Cavaliers selected Andrew Wiggins. Of course, he went to the Timberwolves, joined a year later by Carl Anthony Towns. You know, those seem like good building blocks, although Wiggins oddly has just really terrible advanced stats, and he scores pretty well, but other than that, you know, at least production wise seems to be limited. But you know, he's still obviously very young, so we'll see how he develops there. Cat's obviously been very good, and then Ben Simmons with the 76ers has not played a game yet, but you know, so we'll see how things go with him.
Uh-oh, good name enough. Could add another one to the list. We'll have to update in 3 years. Let's make a hot take in 3 years and decide if he's a bust or not. So I think we should definitely do that. That's the responsible thing to do for this podcast, of course. Now we'll see.
Sounds good. Well, everyone, thanks for checking us out. You can find us at thestepbackatfansided.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search for Over and Back. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back. And thanks for listening. We'll be back again soon.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.